Welcome to Night Sky Tourist, a place to learn the night sky, have fun with its ancient stories, meet astronomers and dark sky advocates, and fall in love with the dark. I'm Vicki Dirksen, your host and author of the website and blog, nightskytourist.com. If you've never visited the website, I invite you to stop by after the podcast. Check out some of the great blog articles, browse through the resource page, and sign up for the newsletters. The newsletters have great content that is exclusive for subscribers. Are you ready for an adventure under the night sky? Let's jump right in. I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, and the biggest lakes I saw were Lake Pendere in Sandpoint, Idaho, and Flathead Lake near Kalispell, Montana. Yet with both of these lakes, it's really easy to see across to the other side. And then when I was in junior high, my family took a road trip across the northern states from Washington all the way to Indiana. And along the way, we stopped somewhere to swim in Lake Michigan. Now, I had learned about the Great Lakes in school, but I didn't understand their size until I swam in one. It was so huge that I couldn't even see the other side, and the waves reminded me of being at the ocean. One of the newest certified international dark sky places is on an island in the northern area of Lake Michigan. And if you look at a map, it's easy to see that this island enjoys exquisite dark skies. In fact, if you visit there, you're going to experience between Bortle 1 and Bortle 2 skies, which we're going to talk about and explain more in the interview. The place that we're talking about in this episode is Beaver Island State Wildlife Refuge Area, which encompasses most of the southern half of the island, as well as a few smaller neighboring islands, too. This is a remote location that you can only reach by plane or ferry, and it's a wonderland for those who love the outdoors and nature, and especially who love wildlife. And then at night, the sky comes alive with more stars than you can fathom. And if you're looking for the northern lights, this is a great place to go. So, in honor of their recent designation as an International Dark Sky Sanctuary, I'm interviewing Cynthia Johnson. Cynthia is the media contact for the new Dark Sky Sanctuary, and she helped write the application for the designation. She's an avid night sky and northern lights photographer, and she's an advocate with Dark Sky International. She is also a DJ for WVBI, a non-commercial educational station operated as a public service by the Preservation Association of Beaver Island. Please join me in welcoming to the podcast, Cynthia Johnson. Cynthia, thank you so much for joining us on the Night Sky Tours podcast from Michigan. I'm so excited to introduce to the listeners a brand new certified international dark sky place here in the United States. So welcome.
Thank you, Vicki. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
So let's start off about where you are located. So you are Beaver Island State Wildlife Research Area, a little bit of a mouthful there, but tell us, where is this place? And also tell us, what is a wildlife research area?
Well, I'm going to use an acronym, BISRWA, because it is a huge mouthful. Our full title is the Beaver Island State Wildlife Research Area. International Dark Sky Sanctuary. That is a section of land that has been set aside for use as an international dark sky sanctuary. It's public land. It is managed by the Michigan Department of Natural Resources, already protected by official state laws and policies. And it is to be used, and always has been, as a habitat for wildlife. There's 9,000 acres. It's at the south end of Beaver Island, Michigan. So Beaver Island is the largest island in the Beaver Island archipelago, where there's seven islands. in northern Lake Michigan. A lot of this entire archipelago, some 23,000 acres, was designated in the mid-70s as the state wildlife research area. So technically, the entire research area is not all sanctuary, and the sanctuary is not all state wildlife research area. The parts that are a research area, the DNR comes, they send different groups, any groups that want to do any kind of studies. For example, the deer, they study how many deer, they put in cameras, they see what they do, and they study what's going on with all of the plants, animals, and wildlife. An additional 230 acres attached to that sanctuary is owned by Central Michigan University. They also have a biological research station on the island, and they are part of the UNESCO Obtwang Biosphere. So we like to say that we're protected by land, sea, and sky.
That's awesome. I've been to
Yeah.
Lake Michigan one time, and I was a kid, so I don't really remember where we were on Lake Michigan, but I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, so we had rivers, we had smaller lakes than Lake Michigan, and then there was the ocean. And so when I went to Lake Michigan, I was like, this feels like I'm at the ocean. It's so big.
It does, and it sounds like it too, with the waves and the quiet. It's very beautiful.
Right. That was the other thing, was like the size of the waves for being a lake. Like my young mind couldn't comprehend waves that size in something called a lake, but that's pretty cool. So I'm curious about what inspired the idea to pursue a designation as an International Dark Skies Sanctuary.
Well, it's very isolated here. So, what ended up happening to me was being out exploring all the time. I love to go out. I go out by myself. I'm a photographer and I love to look at the stars, but I ended up running into other people on the island that were also interested. In fact, in particular, one person whose name is William Markey. He is a member of our Beaver Island Association and, informal dark sky director for the Beaver Island Association. And we would get together and he would talk about the stars. It was fascinating. And he would talk about the stargazing and enjoyment of the night skies that has gone on the island with generations of island residents, and how he occasionally runs into tourists because it's so clean, it's unpolluted, it's quiet. There's no light pollution. It's very dark here. When we saw that designations of other areas began to become big news items, you will remember this because you always look for dark sky destinations that have been newly designated. Years ago, there was only 100. Now there's 200. And we kept seeing this and thinking that, maybe we should think about protecting our dark skies. And maybe we could do that. Maybe it would help a little bit with tourism because we're a very isolated island with limited access and limited visitors. But basically, it was a desire to keep that protected. And someone else had contacted back in 2014 the Dark Sky International organization about maybe Little Sand Bay becoming a park. So we went ahead and just started talking to people and found out what we would need to do to become a dark sky place. And the cool thing that was really inspiring was years and years of protections already from being that wildlife research area, from other agencies protecting the swamps and the rivers and the forest and the animals and the coyotes and all of that. So, lots of inspiration from enjoying the most beautiful skies in the world that we didn't really realize. We just knew it was intensely amazing to be out there. And then the desire to protect those dark skies and to think that we could play a role in creating awareness to people in other areas that the dark skies are awesome and we need to protect them and fight against light pollution.
I think it's funny, kind of what you were talking about here. I think that when you're around skies like that all the time, it's really easy to take it for granted because I grew up in Northern Idaho under the Milky Way, and I thought everybody in the world saw the Milky Way. So, you just sometimes you don't realize what you have until you go somewhere else and you realize, oh, goodness.
Exactly. And that is the tragedy. That's what I started to discover is that, oh my gosh, we are so rare. I had lived here for 7 or 8 years and really enjoyed the skies. But, and I grew up in Southern Michigan. We went out under the stars, but it wasn't a big deal. Nobody said, oh my God, we can see the Milky Way. And now, when you look at YouTube videos and look in movies and where you're at these parks, people are saying exactly that. They are stunned. Oh my gosh, did you hear that story about maybe it was in the 70s? There was an earthquake in Los Angeles. It's part urban legend, part myth. You've heard the story.
I have.
The electricity went out, people went outside, and they didn't know what the lights were in the sky, and it was stars and the Milky Way. So that, to me, that defines it right there.
It's not as much myth or legend as you might think it is, because I actually interviewed on this podcast. I did an episode on Griffith Observatory, which is there in Los Angeles.
Yes.
And I asked the director about that story. I said, is this a true story, or, is it just urban legend? And he said, it's a true story. That the observatory there got many, many phone calls that night.
Wow. Yep, that's the way it is. So I'm glad people are becoming more aware, and that's what we plan on doing here is just to create awareness like that. We have the Milky Way, but everybody else doesn't. So help us save it.
And so, in talking about that, like what your night skies are like in your sanctuary, your International Dark Sky Sanctuary, I read that your skies measure between what's called Bortle 1 and Bortle 2 night skies. So, can you give us an explanation? What does that mean, Bortle 1 or Bortle 2? And what do those kinds of skies look like?
The Borel scale was invented by a man, I believe his name was Ken Bortle. Don't quote me on that. You can look it up. You can look it up on Wikipedia. And he made these distinctions of levels of darkness, mostly based on what you can see. If you can see Orion, the Milky Way, this many stars, on a scale of 1 to 9, nine is the worst. And you can only see a handful of stars at a 9. Let's jump right to a 4 or a 3, because I just spent almost 2 years in upstate New York, where it was a class 3 and a 4. And when I was way out away from light pollution, I could see Orion, but not like here on the island. And honestly, I would just cry. There's a fabulous map called Light Pollution Info. I'm sure you've seen it, where you
Yeah,
can
I
find,
love that map. It's
yes.
like a map, right?
I know I spend hours looking at that
I
map,
do
looking to see where the darkest spots are. And it's incredibly light polluted. And they're getting ready to update that soon. It's very old.
Oh, good. 'Cause it's a fun map. First of all, I'm kind of a map geek anyway. So
Me too.
I
Me
enjoy like
too.
zooming around the world and being like, ooh, that would be a fun place to visit. Where is this?
Exactly. And what I've learned from that map, something that I didn't know, is we are classed as a Bortle class 2 dark sky, which is very dark. We can see millions of stars. We can see the galactic core of the Milky Way. We can see all of the constellations. In fact, we can see so much that it's hard to distinguish. It's
I've
hard
had
to.
that experience. I know exactly what you're talking
Yes.
about. I was out one time, and I lead stargazing experiences all the time. So
Wonderful.
always outside under the night sky. I know exactly where like the major constellations are. And so I had done a stargazing gig one night, and then the next night, my husband and I we went up into the mountains, and it was so starry that it took me a bit to figure out where the constellations were. There were just so many stars. It's crazy.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, the thing is, the Bortle scale, it's like there's a Messier objects, the Sombrero galaxies, different things that are on this list that brings you to the darkest skies, a two and a one. I find this fascinating. There's a thing called Gegenschein. Have you heard of it?
No.
Gegenschein. It's a German word, and it's sort of related to zodiacal light. I'm sure you've heard of that. Opposite from the in the same place as the sunset, when it gets really dark, astronomical twilight, you'll see it's like a band. It's not a band of light. It's a big band of stars. It's kind of sparkly, and it's just a different light than you've ever seen, and it's called zodiacal light. And then there's one that is deeper than that called Gegenschein. It's relatively undocumented, but that I think is one of the qualifiers that makes the difference between a Bortle 2 and a Bortle 1. It's a very fine line. So I learned about that. I am in search of the Gegenschein. Maybe you can do us a podcast in search of the Gegenschein and find someone that has pictures of that or can tell you about it. For now, you can look it up on the Bortle scale thing, and Wikipedia explains it way better than I can. But what I found from that light pollution map and these distinctions is when I'm out on the west side of Beaver Island, which you can travel quite a bit. There's a lot of open spaces, open beach out there, public beach called Donegal Bay. You're up on a hill and you're looking way out and seeing all these different islands. You can watch people go there to sunset. It's an event. And then it gets dark and it's fabulous. Milky Way is right there, zodiacal light. But you're looking southwest deep into the heart of Lake Michigan. And that's classed as a Bortle 1. So not only are we under Bortle Class 2 skies, we're looking into Bortle 1. So we're in some of the darkest skies in the world, looking at the darkest skies in the world.
That's beautiful.
I was so gratified to find that. I'm like, we've got to make this distinction. We need a little extra badge or something to
Yes.
for that. Yeah, because then I started looking at where else does this occur? Like Chile, of course, and around some of these other dark sky sanctuaries.
So you've already mentioned that this area is very remote and,
Yes.
out there in the lake. What kind of activities can visitors do when they visit there? Like, is there camping or what kind of stuff do people do when they visit?
Well, Beaver Island is actually known for having a lack of things to do. In fact, that's why people come here. We have one gas station, we have one grocery store. The town rolls up at night in the off season, and it doesn't stay open that late. After 9 p.m. in the tourist season. But people come here for that. We have two campgrounds. There's one near town and one south of town, which is right at one of the side entrances to the sanctuary. And that campground is just, it's just mesmerizing. You can see the Big Dipper. You look down long stretches of beach. And this is true of several areas on the island. You're just looking down these, a couple miles of beach at nothing but sky, water, and stars. It's just amazing. The northern campground faces due north, and there's that actually has hot water, hot showers, and
Yay.
electricity and a couple of RV hookups. But the big things that people do here is swim, boating. We have two marinas. They go to the lighthouse. We have two lighthouses. There's just an immense amount of birding trails, walking trails, hiking trails, water trails that you can get to from the water or go out to the water. We have about 12 or 15 nature preserves where you can drive in. There are paths. You can walk down these boardwalks to the beach. And this is all self-guided. You're going to need your own flashlights and your own lighting because we don't have any. But the end result is it's total isolation. You cannot be afraid of the dark if you're going to do these things. Because it is dark. And of course, that's when you pick moonlit nights for
Sure.
that. Visitors, they just really come here to relax. Now, we do have parades, festivals, community activities that the people here are very friendly. There's only 600 of us. You can get to know most of us in a week. We have an annual music festival in the woods. We have an Irish festival. We have a classical music festival, 10 days of classical music.
Oh, wow.
Baroque on Beaver. We get some quite famous people here for that. And just a lot of hometown musical entertainment all summer long from local bands and local people. We also have three or four museums, depending on the time of year. Extensive historical museum system available on the Beaver Island app. And before I forget, you can climb both of those lighthouse towers.
Oh,
So
that's
lots of
fun.
yeah,
I
lots
love
of
doing
stuff to
that.
do.
So you've mentioned that you have no lights out in that area there. Do you guys host any kind of nighttime activities, whether it's stargazing or other like just nighttime nature type stuff?
Absolutely. Everything, like I said, everything's open all day and night. You can, if you can find your way and you're brave enough to go down those trails, some of them are just really excellent, excellent walking trails. And when you're out there under the moonlight and the starlight, you can see those pathways. It's perfectly fine. Don't be scared. In the last couple years, we've had like Mary Stuart Adams came to speak. We had over 75 people at the Donegal Bay Pavilion. It's a private pavilion, but they let us use it. And what has happened and evolved in the last 3 or 4 years, there'd be two or three of us out there with telescopes, and people would drop by for sunset and they'd stay. And we would end up with between, 5 and 10, 15, 20 people in the summertime that would come up and look through the telescopes that were available or just look at the stars. Some people would go swimming. We've been really, really fortunate in the last 2 years to have an amateur astronomer. His name is Tony Miller. He's done so much to help us get our designation by having events. He brings huge telescopes, a 16 inches in diameter, 14 inches in diameter. A friend of ours named Dave comes out with his 14-inch telescope. Bill comes out with the binoculars. And so now we've got a presentation, with me yapping in the background and pointing things out. He has worked in tandem with other residents to help them with their telescopes. By the way, you can find David Clark, Aurora Videos, Beaver Island, just fabulous. He really does a lot of deep space photography and Northern Lights viewing. But through those events, casual, and I'm talking 3 or 4 times a week because we're out there and people join us. So that's very casual. Formally, we do things at the library, the Historical Society, and with the Sustainability Fair and the school. All of those things, which we don't even have an event schedule formalized. And we don't do that because of the sanctuary status. Because it's so isolated, because there's no electricity, there's not a lot of comfortable gathering places in the middle of the woods, the sanctuary, in the swamp, in the bog, in the mud, with no electricity, no parking. It's a long way to get into some of those, although we do have some events in the big field. Don't you love it? Come to the big field.
It's a great place to have a stargazing event. Usually the big field means not a lot of trees and stuff, so nothing to block your view.
It's like a planetarium, and that is in the very heart of the sanctuary, away from any lighting. So it's incredibly dark and definitely just inspires awe. Sometimes when I'm down there, or I just feel like you've probably had this feeling before. It's like a big cone, and you're inside the big circle of it, and it's all above you, and you're just floating. It surrounds you. But again, because we are a sanctuary, and this is true of the other 19 sanctuaries in the world, the sanctuary designation comes with the knowledge that, okay, you're really out in the middle of nowhere, you're remote, you don't have a huge opportunity to have a lot of outreach events. So unlike the Three Dark Sky Parks in Michigan, where they can host 20,000 people of an evening, we will never, we will probably never do that. I mean, we might have a fly-in where 30 airplanes come into the two airports and they do it. I doubt that. Maybe 10 years down the road.
But I think that's part of what is, in my mind, I would think that would be part of what could be the attraction to it. Because, for example, Grand Canyon National Park here in Arizona, where I live, they have a 7 or 8 day long star party every summer. And it just draws hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people over those days. Maybe it's in the thousands. I don't really know the numbers. I just know that there are a lot of telescopes and a lot of people. And that's really fun and it's really amazing and exciting and it's at a really amazing place. But sometimes you don't want all the crowds and all the noise that comes along with big crowds. Sometimes it's really nice to go to an ultra dark place and have the place a little more to yourself, to have a smaller, more intimate gathering. And so it sounds like that's a lot of the appeal that you offer that would be different than these other places that have the big space and the big events.
That is true. We would welcome people, but we can't get the numbers here. We have two airports with 6 to 8 passenger planes coming all day long, and then they're done. Nobody flies in the dark over here, so that's a limited number of people. I think we figured out we might be able to get 1,000 people here, really pushing and maximizing all of the planes and both of the boats of a certain day. But we don't have a lot of accommodations. We don't have the room. We don't have the facilities. So it does become a very exclusive journey. It's not overly expensive, but it does mean that there you are. You are out there by yourself. You can find yourself if you want to heal, if you want to transcend, if you want to meditate, you want to have a romantic getaway. You are alone out here at times.
That's great.
It is 55 square miles. But if you do want to find out, some of the events we are having, we'll be having a dedication in September. Our biggest promotion for education, outreach, and awareness occurs at WVBI.net. We have a small radio station here. We have different kinds of programming. You should give our station manager a call. I think you should be on our programming for sure. But there online and on the air, we have a dark sky calendar, dark sky event calendar every day of the week. And we also talk about the dark skies on some of the other programs that we have. So that's our big push and our big outreach, along with all the help from Dark Sky International, that's really helping create awareness about the fact that there's only 20 places in the world recognized. Does that not just astound you?
And we need to, because the last thing we want is for places like where you are to get overrun with light pollution in the future. We want to protect them so that we will always have those. But
Definitely.
so our conversation leads me to realize that if people want to visit the Beaver Island State Wildlife Research Area, your sanctuary, or the communities around it, that this isn't going to just be a drive-by. First of all, you're out in the lake. So share with us any tips that you have for people who might want to come and visit there.
Well, first of all, you've got to plan well ahead. The island is already an attractive nature lovers' palace. Always has been. People love to come here, camp and hike, and enjoy nature on this level. We have so very few lights, even in the town, We're hoping to retrofit all of those, and then the entire island will be a dark sky park, probably, or even just call the whole island a dark sky island. So there's very few hotels. I think we have two or th we have three now. We only have a couple of car rental places. Those get maxed out. You've got to call ahead. You can only get here by ferry boat. It's a 2 and a 2.5 hour ride. And the airplane ride is only 15 minutes, but you've got to book well ahead. And those are limited by time and weather. It's entirely possible to get stuck here. So you not only plan well ahead, but you plan for the contingency that you might be stuck here if it's too foggy or snowy or windy or rainy. So I would definitely check with the Chamber of Commerce at discoverbeaverisland.org for availability and for information. The hours that things are open change. On a really positive note, it's very casual here. Casual dress, time runs differently here. People are very relaxed. So you got to bring it down a notch as soon as you get here and realize that not everything's going to be open, not everything's going to be on time. Your rental car might be waiting at the boat dock for you with the keys in it. It's that new contactless travel that they have going on now, where you never see anybody, you just check in. But that is not true. I do recommend doing your homework before you come.
Yeah, that sounds like a great tip. And especially like you were saying with the ferry, people need to make reservations for that as well, right?
Oh, definitely. The ferry holds 250 passengers. So if you're just coming over, and you can just come over for the day, but it's tricky. It's tricky. And you don't have to make a reservation as a passenger, but if you want to bring your car, which I do recommend, you must make a reservation well ahead of time. I think they're booked through May right now.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah.
How can people get more information about Beaver Island State Wildlife Research Area? You've mentioned a couple of websites already, but are there other websites that people need to be aware of that they can get more info?
Yes, our own webpage is at darkskyisland.org. Our parent nonprofit umbrella organization is beaverislandassociation.org. But the best place to find out about coming here and any information is at discoverbeaverisland.org. That is our chamber. There's also, the very best place to go to find out everything you want to find out about our sanctuary designation is, of course, at darksky.org, the Dark Sky International website, where they've set up a whole page about us, about the research area, about the designation, and a lot about the area with contact numbers and emails for people.
Yeah, and that's how I found you, was through that
Yeah.
page.
Oh, really? Well, now we know.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put links in the show notes for this so that listeners can just scroll down to the show notes and you can click directly on the links to everything that Cynthia has just shared here so that they can get information and plan their trip. So I'm putting this on my to-do list. Places to visit. It sounds
Oh, you must come. You
yeah.
must come, because here's a few sentences about, and this is what I really, really wanted to say today. And it has all my best words in it. And you can cut it out if you like. But the sanctuary gives you such a feeling to be out there, and it's so safe. This island is virtually crime-free. It's so safe to be out there alone. You can't even imagine, but it's incredible. It's stunning. It's mesmerizing. It's awe-inspiring. There's hundreds and thousands and millions of stars upon stars and skies that are blue or aqua or midnight blue or teal, and the colors, they're tinged with twinkling, sparkling, moving points of light that decorate the night, and it makes you feel so tiny, amazing. It's a feeling. You can see the galactic core, the Milky Way. All the constellations are out there, the Big Dipper, the Swan, and so many constellations are visible and easy to follow and find and move across the sky. The first time I realized that the constellation and all this stuff moves, the Milky Way, I was stunned at my ignorance and actually what that meant. So yeah, I strongly encourage you to get out any under any dark skies in these last places that are left in the world, and we will welcome you heartily here on Beaver Island for sure.
Thank you so much, Cynthia, for joining us and sharing your magical little spot here in the United States.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Cannot thank you enough.
Do you want to be more proactive about planning your personal stargazing experiences? Maybe you want to take a walk under the full moon or throw a blanket on the ground to watch a meteor shower. Whatever celestial events you don't want to miss can be found in my 2024 Stargazing Guide. This month-by-month guide keeps you up to date on when to see the planets, a meteor shower, or an eclipse. It also gives you the dates for all the moon cycles throughout the year so you can plan for better stargazing nights without the glow of the moon. You'll also enjoy learning some cultural astronomy associated with a featured constellation each month, along with some really fun moon facts. The good news is that this stargazing guide is free. When you subscribe at nightskytours.com, you get the free download in your inbox. You can print it or you can save it on your computer where you can refer to it every month. To get your free 2024 stargazing guide, visit nightskytours.com. Here's to more nights of awe-inspiring stargazing. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Night Sky Tourist Podcast. If you enjoy the Night Sky Tourist Podcast, please show your support by subscribing to it and giving us 5 stars. Your ratings are really important to me, and they help more people discover the podcast. Be sure to visit nightskytourist.com for great articles and resources. And while you're there, sign up for the newsletter for exclusive content. Until next time, keep looking up.